The Amityville Horror didn't come along until after the Lutzes left the house and it got national attention. So, and like the Warrens say, when they first got involved in this, it was just a haunted house.
On the morning of December the 18th, 1975, with the mercury near freezing, Father Pecoraro, a Catholic priest, arrives at the new home of George and Kathy Lutz, the infamous High Hopes home, formerly occupied by the murdered family of Ronald DeFeo Jr., now serving six life sentences for what the Deliver Us From Evil tapes have shown to be the demonically guided murders of his family. Pecoraro has been asked to the home by George Lutz, a non-practicing Methodist who was told by a close friend that he must have the home blessed before the family begins their move-in. The Lutzes and the priest exchange greetings, and Pecoraro heads inside. During his room-by-room blessing rite, Father Pecoraro notices how cold the house is and how much colder it gets when he arrives in one of the bedrooms that served as the scene for the murder of the DeFeo brothers Mark and John.
Sancta Michael Archangele, defende nos in prolio, contra nequition
and sitias. Father Pecoraro begins sprinkling holy water in the room and performing the minor exorcism Catholic rite that blesses the room and casts any demonic spirits out of it. Suddenly, Father Pecoraro hears a chilling loud voice. Father Pecoraro is unnerved and frightened. In the only recorded interview he ever gave on the subject, he describes what happened next.
Deliver Us From Evil. Timeline. 4 October 1979. The broadcast television premiere of Alan Landsberg's In Search of the Amityville Horror. Narrated by Leonard Nimoy.
I was blessing the sewing room. It was cold. It was really cold in there. And I thought, gee, this is peculiar. You know, because it was a lovely day out. And it was winter, yes, but it didn't account for that kind of coldness. By also sprinkling holy water. And I heard a rather deep voice behind me saying, get out. It seemed so directed toward me that I was really quite startled. I felt a slap at one point on the face. I felt somebody slap me, and there was nobody there.
As we shall see, at the time the Amityville Horror movie is playing in theaters, there arises a cottage industry of pronouncing oneself an Amityville Horror, paranormal skeptic, or investigative journalist expert. As we shall see, the first of these is a man named Stephen Kaplan. These skeptics insisted that Father Pecoraro never existed, or if he did, he never visited the house and was a character created out of thin air by the Lutzes and Amityville Horror author Jay Anson to sell books. But as you just heard, Pecoraro himself explained to Leonard Nimoy, not only did he exist, but his description of that fateful move-in day matches precisely the account given by both George and Kathy Lutz. Father Pecoraro's account also matches the account he personally gave to investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Because Father Pecoraro, who many people said did not exist, talked with Lorraine and I. He told us all the horrible things that happened to him. We sat with him, he was as close as I am to you, Tony, at dinner at Kathy Lutz's mother's home in Deer Park. He told me things that the public has never heard about. And tonight, we are going to endeavor to explain what really happened in that home.
How is it possible that three different people were told of Father Pecoraro's house blessing in such vivid detail, and all three accounts match? The account given by the Lutzes, the account given by the Warrens, and the account given to Leonard Nimoy by Father Pecoraro himself. Is it believable that an ordained Roman Catholic priest, indeed one who was an ecclesiastical judge, could be co-opted in such a grand, elaborate scheme that would require the coordination of relaying this alleged hoax to three different sets of individuals to recount nearly identically? Kaplan and others' case is built on the fact that Anson, at the request of Pecoraro and the Lutzes, had given him the name Father Mancuso in the book. This, the skeptics claim, was proof the story was fabricated, as no Father Mancuso could be found. As it turns out, there is a perfectly reasonable and very practical explanation for the withholding of Father Pecoraro's identity. Lorraine Warren explains.
I think about the shows. I think about all the nonsense that came up because of the priests involved and how they would say there was no priest. Mm-hmm. Because we were asked to protect the identity of that priest, and so were the Lutzes asked to. And we did, because of the fact that we knew how important it was to do it. But then finally it got out who Father Pecoraro was, that he was the priest involved. And finally it was released. And still they would find something else. But that case was a true case of demonic infestation that could have destroyed that family.
The audio evidence you heard from In Search Of, combined with Lorraine Warren's explanation for why the Lutzes and the Warrens withheld Father Pecoraro's identity, corroborate and legitimizes the horrifying event that marks the beginning of the Lutzes' ordeal at 112 Ocean Avenue, an ordeal Father Pecoraro will share even at a distance of some 12 miles. Shortly after his attempt to bless the Lutz house, he began seeing blisters on the palm of his hand, blisters doctors could not explain nor treat.
Strange events also affected the priest who blessed the house. He discovered blisters were festering on his hands.
I went to the doctor for it, yes, and he couldn't explain it. He thought it might be caused by anxiety, and of course that's feasible. But I don't think I'm given over to psychosomatic responses.
Ralph Sarchi has real-world experience with these temperature swings, the physical attacks, and the length of time the attacks can continue.
You got any experience at all with priests having to deal physically or even maybe just being verbally or audibly yelled at or challenged by the demonic, by demons?
Well, pretty much every exorcism, you're going to have something like that. I mean, you know, during an exorcism, the demon is threatening everybody that's present. Most of the time he's going after the exorcist. But I was at an exorcism where Bishop McKenna had one of the sisters sitting in a chair on the altar, by the altar.